Let's begin. Sup, everybody. This is Carrick with ACG. Welcome to another Isolation Podcast. We're going to sit down. We're going to talk about a couple things. We're going to talk about video games. We're going to talk about real life. We're going to talk a little bit of behind the scenes about being a video game reviewer and some of my thoughts on current news. Let's begin. Want to say thank you to everybody who's become a patron. It absolutely does help, especially when this is the worst, basically the worst that YouTube has ever been for me. It's quite crazy to see numbers that are from 2015, 2016 when it comes to YouTube and how it's paying out. So I absolutely appreciate people who've jumped into the Discord or followed on Twitch in particular. So anyway, you can follow me also on Twitter. All of that will be in the description if you want those links. Let's begin. The first thing I want to talk about is, you know, I don't know why this popped into my head, but I wanted to talk about it to people. Do you guys have a favorite weather in games? Because to me, especially lately, there's been a lot of these things like the Ice Hancer mod for GTA 4. There's been a lot of things about EMBs for Skyrim. There's all these crazy different ways in which you can get really cool lighting. But I've noticed that many of them hinge on almost a dried out, desiccated feeling to their lighting. Almost a little too white, a little too clear. Now, you do and will get texture and graphics adjustments like GTA 5s that they're always showcasing some kind of new rain, especially with ray tracing becoming a thing. You're starting to see that in a lot of trailers. In fact, a trailer dropped a couple days ago for one of the, what was it, natural lighting mods for GTA 5? I can't remember. But you see all these weird things. I wanted to ask what your guys' favorite weather is in games. Mine has to be the same it is in real life, which is just windy and rainy. I was playing a game yesterday and I was enjoying it quite a bit, having a good time. This is a game that's under NDA, so I can't really say what game it is. There's some fighting going on in some outdoorsy areas, and I'm in the forest, and the wind's blowing, and the trees are creaking, and I'm just sitting there going like, man, this reminds me of, you know, when I was a kid out in the woods, because we did live pretty far out from everybody else, and going out there and just exploring while it was rainy and windy. You know, it's weird because I had a slightly different lifestyle than a lot of other people, I think, at a younger age. So when I was younger, Pacific Northwest, if it was really sunny, that was yard work, right? Now, you got accustomed to doing yard work when it was rainy and windy, absolutely. But during the summertime was when you would do some yard work that in particular wouldn't necessarily come up in winter, like mowing the lawn. We had a massive lawn. This lawn was something that was incredible. It was multiple acres. I think we had about 2.5. And I'm pretty sure some of it broke the laws of physics. It was like Lovecraft nature. The shit was upside down and inverted. And you would have to mow these horrendous hills with a hand mower. This is back in the day. There was no riding lawnmower style mowers that could get up this kind of thing. And you still had to take care of it. You could use a weed eater. That'd break your back and take you about 10 fucking hours. But you could grab a branch of a tree and literally use your other hand to sort of lean the lawnmower down this huge hill and then just curl the lawnmower back up and then lean it down again and curl it back up and lean it down again. I guess that's why I was able to do so many curls when I was younger, when I was a kid and lifting weights. It is crazy pants. But when it was raining, you couldn't do that, right? Because my parents, you know, they were probably risque for what I think parents are now when it comes to making their kids do yard work. My parents were usually like, go outside and do it. But when it was rainy, they wouldn't do that kind of thing. You know, you wouldn't want a kid slipping, even though admittedly multiple pairs of Nike shoes lost their toes because I would slightly slip in wet summery grass and get my foot in the blade of the lawnmower. Luckily, never lost a toe. So when it was rainy and windy, there was this ability for us to do pretty much whatever we wanted. And as a young kid, you know, my dad had a shop. I was building swords, maces, axes, all kinds of crazy stuff. We had an aluminum cutter, so I'd be out there cutting, and I was making full-on axes, learning how to put them into shafts, all this crazy stuff, ninja stars, everything you could really think of I was making, whether they were wood or metal or made out of, unfortunately, one of my dad's broomstick handles. There were multiple times where he would come out there and I would have taken a broomstick. These are the ones that you can unscrew and screw into a workshop broom, and I would unscrew those things and I would use the metal part as sort of the handle. A little bit like the end of the pommel kind of thing, and or the end of the hilt kind of thing. And what I would do was I would take their wood grinder and I would grind it down into like basically a ninja sword, because it was fully straight. So it was easy to make a ninja sword out of one of those. Chop off the end, make it about the right length, get yourself, you know, spend some time. I was naming them when I was a little kid. You know, this was like, I was probably, I don't know, 7 to 14, you know, with a black marker, you'd write like Excalibur on the side, even though it was a ninja sword, because you didn't know the difference between Eastern and Western civilizations. You'd just be like, it's called Excalibur. Yeah, it's a ninja sword. That means shit. Of course it is. So you'd go out there and you'd do all this crazy stuff in the winter. And I was a big fan of role playing, big fan of D&D even back then. So, you know, you're fighting off imaginary orcs and shit like that. And I just always liked the wind and rain, and that translated directly to games. I was thinking about that today. I was like, you know, a lot of people like snow, and I think snow is great. I love snow in games. There's something about it that captures that sort of winterland mystery that we all like. But at the same time, when it's nice and windy and just absolutely crazy outside, I love that. Now, I will say one thing about the snow, and I've talked about this in the podcast that I really enjoy. One thing I like about snow is it's chaos without the sound. You can have snow and no wind, but it looks so violent. It's just violence and silence mixed together. And that's what I so love when it's really heavy snow with no wind, because there's no sound. Sound is muted from the snow anyway. But like, let's say when you have no wind and it's just falling snow and it looks so violent, but it's just absolutely quiet outside. I also love that. But when it comes to games, we get all these games that are like, hey, man, look at our weather systems. Look at this reflection off of, let's say, some kind of puddle or something like that, which is great and everything. But you know what I noticed? Very few games have handled trees movement and brush movement really well in video games. And I can't wait to see the next generation to see if we start getting that kind of stuff. A lot of times you'll get a game where a bush will just do the thing where it vibrates, or it like moves three spots left and then three spots right. Even The Witcher had issues with this, though The Witcher did try to fix it with some generic movement to the trees. I just can't wait to see what we get as we move forward. You know, you have these third-party options like Speed Tree and all this other stuff. I would just love to see somebody go out there and really add some physics to those. I think when you look at nature, photogrammetry and all these crazy things, and Unreal 5, like I talked about in the last podcast, or was that the last podcast? I think it was, because the International would have popped up prior. You know, all this lighting and stuff is great to me, but I want to see something happen. I thought about this even more over the weekend. I was talking about it with the developer, and I was like, you know, it's always either super rainy, right, or super sunny. And the one thing that isn't handled very well is it's like the midtones. It's the dreary days. Have you ever noticed if you get an EMB for Skyrim, or you get a game that looks really good, a lot of times I'll show it in these very particular ways, but if you ever see an overcast day, it doesn't really look right. Overcast, a lot of people think is... And it can be, certainly can be dreary and dull, and the colors are dulled a little bit depending on what's going on. But there's also a fascinating amount of variance that occurs in those kind of moments that we don't see in a lot of games. And I think lighting engines, especially as we add ray tracing, we'll start to see that, which is, it's actually exciting to me. You know, things just sitting here thinking about it. I have no clue why I even wanted to talk about weather in games, but I'd like to know what yours is. You can feel free. You know, let's do the Twitter thing. If you got to this point, we're only a couple minutes in, but if you got to this point, you can certainly hashtag and just say my fave, MYFAV. So hashtag my fave and just write down what your favorite kind of weather or effect like that you like in games. You know, rain, snow, winter, summer, and just maybe a little blurb in Twitter about why you like it. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just love that kind of stuff when it's done really well in games. So looking at a little list I have here of things I want to talk about, I want to talk about buying yourself out of issues. So this is going to be a little bit of tech discussion, but I think that while I'm going to base this around YouTube, this is tech discussion I've seen in most of the entertainment industries that I've been involved with, or even just entertainment hobbies that I've taken up, such as airsoft. So this is going to, I think, sort of translate to everybody in some way. So bear with me. Some of it'll be a tiny bit, you know, more on the video creator side and audio side just for a second. I want to talk about buying yourself out of issues, which is something that pops up a lot. So I have a level on my Discord. I think it's 50. It might be 100. And that's where I sit and I work with a YouTuber for a great deal of time. In fact, now that I have so many people, it's actually too much time, but I work with people. We run them through SEO. I look at their systems. They make phone calls to me. We check their decibels. We check all their settings and Streamlabs, all this kind of stuff. And we really get a setup. I mean, I spend like personal time with them. And One of the things that pops up randomly will be a discussion that I saw somebody else had who isn't at that level, but they said something that reminded me of somebody who was in that level and what they attempted to do. And I want to just give this generic information out. So when I'm always helping people, a lot of people will say, I want to get it right the first time, right? I want to get it right the first time. So I don't want to buy, let's say, this piece of poor equipment. One of the things I always try to tell people is that in almost every avenue, there's a base level. And when you get to the base level, it will be good enough for competition, right? You gotta bring your A game, guys. You gotta bring your A game above the tech. The tech you can get at a particular level, and that'll get you into the competition. It's almost like buying your ticket to the game. You'll get there with this kind of tech. Now, can you step it up? You absolutely can. It allows more variation, maybe a little bit more adjustment to your sound or your video. But with less than that, you can get into the game. This pops up a lot of times with microphones or audio devices. Now, somebody, right now I'm recording, I've got an AC on, a fan on, dogs barking in the background, and somebody with a lawnmower outside. So I don't have the perfect sound because I just don't have the money to have any kind of spare room or sound system of my own. But I can certainly tell you what works and what doesn't to get away with, let's say, working in fairly poor environments where you try to work some things out and you don't spend a bunch of money. I'll get a lot of people saying, hey, I'm going to buy this new mic. And so they'll look and they'll find a Shure mic. That's what I'm using right now. And they'll find a Shure. You know, mine's on the end of this arm. You can hear it when I move it and stuff like that. That's because, to be brutally honest, I know that at this point, most people are here for me and they necessarily won't die if, you know, I bump something, right? So, but it's still expensive. And I did what I'm telling you not to do. I'm trying to pass on some love, pass on some knowledge to you guys. Don't do what I did, which is where you try to buy yourself out of problems. What I had was a ground loop. Let me describe this for a second. A ground loop is basically, well, the easiest way to describe it is you plug a bunch of things into a fucking outlet and one of the items tries to use the other item as the ground. That's sort of the way it is. And it's a loop. It doesn't really get to the ground. It doesn't create its ground. And so in a lot of audio, you'll get this sound, right? Or various other things that can happen. And there's multiple types of grounds, but that's the type of ground I particular had. Guys, I was buying everything. I was buying lifters. I was buying conditioners. I was looking at replacing all the wiring in my home. And I did spend quite a bit of money trying to fix it. I ended up fixing it sort of, I would consider it the poor man's way, by the way. I did spend some money on items I didn't need. It's nice to have them now. But I fixed it in two particular ways. One, I literally ran a wire somewhere so that it wasn't on the same breaker. And that actually took 80-90% of the problem away. The other was I ended up getting a Roland USB audio capture device. What this does is it takes your microphone and it transforms it into a USB signal your PC can read. But Roland in particular had some settings that I liked, which is an auto setting. You don't actually have to set it manually if you don't want. You can push a button and record, and it will automatically figure out things like room noise and your decibel levels, where they need to be, and it'll set those for you. And I really needed that, and I bought it because I was like, you know what? If this doesn't work, I can return it. If it does work, and I can read those settings, and I don't like what I've got, but it still worked and helped me, I could take those settings and move them onto a software device of some kind. I ended up liking the hardware enough. And I kept it. And I've never been happier with a piece of hardware. Incredibly happy. But it cost a lot. And, you know, one of the things I always tell people is when I was first recording, I was actually getting very good audio out of a $15 lapel, one that goes on your collar, Sony condenser mic that you can still buy online. These mics are very good. And the reason why I was getting good sound is because I was in a room, a different room, by the way, that had... It was on the other side of the house with no sound. There was no, you couldn't hear lawnmowers. There was no ACs. There was no wind. And you couldn't hear the dogs. And it was a smaller room that was contained a little bit more with things on the wall to stop reverb. And that was a cheaper setup overall. But when I moved to the other room, because that room was taken, then we ended up having these issues. And I always tell people, man, you just don't need to buy a bunch of stuff. You know, it's, for example, do you know the number of people who are running, let's say, their Twitch or YouTube stream who have hardwood floors and it sounds like crap with that high reverb. One thing people don't realize about reverb, by the way, which is when you've got that sound echoing off the walls and re, as in again, verbing into your system, you will end up having a really terrible sound. There is actually currently no real good software for removing that. There's softwares that try, but even amongst recording artists, they'll tell you if you have something that's got really bad reverb, your best bet is actually to figure out a way to re-record it. That's how bad reverb is. Now, almost everything else in the world you can adjust. You could send it to audio, you know, people who that's their job and they can get something useful out of it, but is it worth the money and the time, right? So what I always tell people is, hey man, you know, if you have hardwood floors, buy a rug. No lie, that's all you need to kill a good amount of reverb is buy a rug. A good amount of stuff on your desk. If you have a flat desk in front of you and a huge flat screen in front of you, you are going to get bounce from the sound. That's why a lot of times on Amazon, people are selling these little tiny, they look like a big C, the letter C, but they're filled with foam and you put them in front of you, you put your mic down in it. And what that does is that audio that passes past the mic when you're talking to it doesn't bounce off your monitor back into your mic. Now, those are a little bit expensive. Do you know how you can make one yourself? Literally buy $15 worth of foam and make one like you would make a damn couch fort. Literally just put them around your friggin' keyboard if you have to and put your mic down in there. Now, you don't want to do that during a Twitch stream. I'm just telling you if you wanted to record something quickly. Things on your desk that cause audio to break up. Like I know a lot of people who know life, they don't have the money. Let's say they're, for example, this happens a lot of times. You go to an event, you're at a hotel. Hotels can have notoriously terrible sound. A lot of people I know who do their recordings will actually find a small area of the room to do the recording next to the bed where the bed's going to eat up a lot of the bounce of sound. And they will actually put the mic now down like near the floor and they'll do the recording there. And I've seen people use foam on their desks where they just put a piece of foam down, take that foam up when they're done recording because nobody can see it. These are all things, anything that's a fabric, anything like that will break up your audio bounce. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because not that I want you to, you know, make a complete ass of yourself and just put this shit everywhere, but I'm just telling you that there's ways to sort of test before you buy. There's ways to look at what your issues are. It doesn't mean that you want to buy a bunch of foam and just throw it out like discs and then pick it back up and put it away. But what you could do is you could test to see where your audio is coming from before you spend a big amount of money, you know, trying to buy yourself out of the problem. Another thing with video footage, your stock Elgato is not amazing. And I don't like Elgato. I think, in fact, they are one of the biggest ripoff bullshit fake companies in the world. I always have, and I've multiple times refused any kind of working with them. That being said, you as a person would be able to grab one of the basic Elgatos. You could even maybe get it on a cheap sale, and you would be able to record very good footage and post it online. There's two things that are required for that. A PC that's somewhat good, and the ability to understand that you need high bit rate, something IGN can't figure out. Go look at IGN's videos. They look like they're recorded at like 1 meg per second. It's terrible. Understanding that if you do have something, use it to its extent, right? There, I mean, if you've got something that you can use, check it out and see if it works. If you have an AVerMedia recorder, you know, crank the bit rate up and see how good of a picture you can get. Shadowplay. I know a lot of people who are like, especially when they're streaming, we all know that there's a cap on streaming. It's about 5 to 7 megs. Even professional, the streamers, you know, sometimes they'll get away with more, sometimes they won't. That's very sort of cool that they have a limit because YouTube doesn't have a limit. And so when you're doing a video recording, you will get people who are accustomed to Twitch and they'll be using 5 or 7. And then you'll look at their stuff and you'll be like, this is terrible. Why does this look so bad? Because they should be easily in the 60 to 80 to 90. And that's even with YouTube compression, because even with YouTube compression, YouTube will still have more data to compress than it would if you didn't do that. That's the thing. It is better. It doesn't cost you anything, right? That's a free thing you can do. As long as you have the Elgato, crank that Elgato to the highest, you know, bit rate it can handle, verify your PC can handle it, it's not going to have any issues, and run it at that. Do those kind of things. Do those kind of things and test those kind of things before you go running out and thinking, I'm going to buy a second computer for this. Matter of fact, you see a lot of people, if for a while it was, we're going to have two streaming computers. That was the big thing. It was like, we're going to have two. And now a shit ton of people, if they don't have a secondary person helping them, have gone back away from having two PCs. Now, the big thing with Twitch in particular is a lot of people have also gone away from the big, you know, Dr. Disrespect kind of thing. Other than him and a few others who have the huge presentation, a lot have gone away from that and back towards the more like, sup, man, this is me kind of thing, which works for you guys who are starting out. I think you should definitely try that as well. Don't worry about trying to buy the best green screen out there so that you can green screen your entire house. Man, you got to test this stuff first. You got to verify you're going to even be recording in the same spot. I moved twice. Make sure you're going to be recording in the same spot. You don't want to buy a blue screen and then, you know, or a green screen. And then a week later be like, shit, man, I'm moving a completely different place. If you have a webcam, adjust it, put it in a couple different spots, put it in a spot that might be a little easier for you. Put it in a spot that's more convenient. Look at convenience, look at cost, test things before you buy them. And if you do buy them, shit, man. If you don't want to buy from Amazon, I get it, but I'm just going to tell you, I buy from Amazon because I can return the damn things. And that's honestly why I do. I buy it because if I buy from them and I'm unhappy with something, I return it. I have no issues whatsoever just being like, pop, returning it. What that does is that helps me, of course, be able to get something, test it, see if it works. I would suggest you do the same. You might have a local electronics center in your local area. But sorry, I'm just killing a bug. I left my back door open. But yeah, you get all these kind of things where people try to buy themselves out of these problems. And I'm looking at hardware right now where I can tell you it's such a waste. It's such a waste. You can get a pretty good microphone and, you know, make sure that your room doesn't have these big flat walls around it and you will be in good shape. I have seen people put a nice blanket on their bed when recording in their room, and you can see a 5 to 8 decibel change in the way they sound by just putting a nice blanket on instead of like having just random shit on there, throwing their board games on there. A lot of people like to have their board game backdrop behind them. Well, guess what? All those board games and those backdrops are cardboard. They're going to bounce your audio. So you got to protect the audio bounce as well. Audio bounce 3, 4, 5 times around your room. And that's where you get a lot of that reverb sound. But anyway, it's like everything, you know, I do airsoft. I always tell people it's great to have a $500 gun. Sure, right? If that's what you want to do, man. But I've got 4 or 5 $70 guns, barely more than a video game. And I'm still playing with them. And I'm still beating people with them. So there's a certain level that you get. And I think people get sort of nuts and they start thinking, I'm just going to buy myself out of every problem that I have. And I got to tell you, man, unless you're a fucking Timberland, you just don't need to worry about that shit. Moving on from there, let's talk a little bit about behind the scenes reviewing. So I've had some people who I'm helping right now, and they were talking about different issues that they've been having with reviewing, burnout, all that kind of stuff. You know, burnout's difficult. I do want to say I'm not going to get into a whole burnout spiel because I've talked about that on this podcast a couple times. I do think, and funny enough, I adjusted my stuff in my room. A suggestion I give everybody is to adjust your stuff. I adjusted my stuff in my room, and I got to tell you, it actually helped. But when I'm helping these people, one of the things that seems to come up a lot is just not knowing where to go. And it, like for a positive, I guess a positive experience with games. Let me explain that for a second so people don't think it's all negative. But there's a lot of negativity. Somebody will post a video and they'll get, you know, 15 people saying good job, and they'll get one person saying, you know, you suck. And the human brain, guys, remember, the human brain is a masterpiece of a disaster. It is such a conundrum when you look at it. It is a cumbersome device that has so many fail states in it and so many different different systems in it that it needs redundancies because your brain will fuck up all the time. And luckily, you know, and if you don't think your brain will be fucked up, just go look at any, you know, like illusion or anything like that. Your vision is telling you one thing, your brain's telling you something completely different. It's like, this isn't possible. You can smell one thing and think it's one thing and it's not. You know, our senses aren't incredibly amazing. But one thing it does really well, and it's always done, and this is if you believe evolution. If you don't believe in evolution, you know, believe whatever you want. But I will say this, that your brain is there to keep you out of trouble. And the disasters of yesteryear when your caveman brain aren't there anymore, But there are some things that your brain responds to, which is that negativity, because it sees it as danger. And in the past, danger was a puma, right? You had to worry about that puma coming out at you out of the fucking bushes because you and Urklaw were getting it on in, you know, some sagebrush, and you got to make sure she doesn't get eaten so she can have your babe. Here's the problem. We don't have that for a lot of people now. And we have our own issues for sure. But what happens is emotional states can become a thing. They can become the danger, right? When, you know, you're fighting lions and tigers all day and shit like that, sometimes maybe you just don't have a moment to really self-reflect and get depressed about somebody saying something bad because you're too busy, you know, fighting for your fucking life. You're too busy scrapping. So it can be easy to see that one negative thing and your brain will blow it out of proportion. And it will make it such a negative. And I always tell people, you know, you have to identify the negative and make sure that it really even works for you. Because one of the fallacies, and this is something that you gotta understand right quick. You'll hear a lot of people say, you know, there's no bad criticism or something like that. There absolutely is. There is uninformed criticism, which is some of the worst criticism. It is criticism where the person who is doing it is completely uninformed. And that is the difference between a person making, let's say, a 15-minute review of some indie game and somebody coming in and being like, you're dumb, it's a sword, not an axe or whatever. And you're like, no, it's for sure a sword. But that can bother people. Somebody be like, I know I'm right, it's right there in the video. Now I'm going to get mad about this. I'm going to get upset. And it's quite easy to let those things bring you down. I just want to make sure that you guys understand, you know, you have to learn how to separate those. And there's various different tools for that. But one of the things I would tell you to do is for every, if you're getting a good amount of positive feedback and then one or two negative, like a lot of people I know will get really upset about a downvote. And it's like, dude, you have no clue who downvoted that. You don't even know if a person did it on purpose. I have downvoted videos on accident and then went back and been like, shit, I hit the wrong button because I was on mobile, you know, big fat thumb. So you don't know, right? And to be honest, man, who gives a shit, right? I mean, really, first of all, thumbs down, thumbs up don't mean shit anymore. They legitimately don't mean anything at all. They're engagement now on YouTube. Thumbs down means engagement. Thumbs up means engagement. I can tell you right now, I think we're all very close to having YouTube just say comments are being turned off. I really do believe that. Comments are a cesspool. And they're a cesspool of every type of nastiness that you can imagine. And so what I always tell people is, you know, when you start looking at those comments and they start, don't hinge on them for the positive or the negative, because I've seen a lot of people hinge on them for the positive as well. They'd be like, well, this person said I did a really good job and I like that feedback. That's great. That is great. But you really have to understand that it's a double-edged sword, and the human brain will get accustomed to the positive, especially if you do a fairly good job and you get, like, let's say 700 comments and 650 are great and 50 are not. Then what will actually happen is your brain will revert and look at the 50 because you will be accustomed to the 650. And that's actually how humans work. We get accustomed to the static and we notice and elevate the difference. And that's what you would be noticing. For example, if you got 600 negative comments for months on end and got 50 positive, you would, if as a normal person would, probably feel really bad. But those 50, you might be a little bit more interested in. Be like, why did people like this? Let's say I released a video shitty on purpose. And I'm like, 50 people like this? Why? Because brains, we want to see what's different. By the way, if you're getting 600 downvotes and 50 upvotes, you're most likely a trailer for a third-party video game that's like doing a remaster or something. That seems to be the thing now. But it's just really important that you don't let those kind of things bother you too much. Me, I separate it because I remember personal experience. I've worked multiple jobs prior to this one and they were far worse. And they had people up in my face in real life. And this isn't real life, guys. It's not. You know, and I've had people get mad at me. They're like, well, you don't take it serious. Bull fucking shit. You can take it serious and then step away. You absolutely can. You know why? Because you took it serious enough to understand you needed to step the fuck away. It doesn't take somebody over the age of 7 with an IQ of fucking 90 to figure that out. But you have jackasses who always want to pretend that by saying that, you don't care. It's like, aha, I proved it. That person doesn't care. It's not like that at all. But you have to understand how much you take it in. You absolutely do. And how much it matters to you concerning or compared to everything else. And for me, I've seen some weird shit and I've had some amazing jobs, but with some pretty shitty people at times, and one or two shitty jobs with some amazing people at times. But I remember those. I have a good memory for those situations. And so a YouTube comment, a YouTube situation, this high school shit, I'm just like, whatever. And that's what you should do. You should understand that because you want to make it your job should really hinge on, are you doing what you need to do when you create the video? Not necessarily worrying that the zeitgeist responds all in the same way to it. At some point, you have to step away. You really do. Because you can't change it, by the way. You can't go in there. Somebody will be like, hey, man, you have an audio break at this time and this time, or you have a voice crack on. You'll be like, great, thanks. Can't fucking fix it. Can't do anything. You're not allowed to. You can't go into YouTube and fix 90% of the issues. So might as well not worry about too many of them. Write them down. Notate them. Understand that you might need to fix something next time, but move on. The reason why I bring it up is because I think people take a lot of the shit way too serious, man. And this is a great time to look at it. This is a great time and a terrible time, but it's a good time for comparison as we come out of this. By the way, speaking of isolation, I hope you guys are all doing well. Some places are opening up around me, and I was looking at, you know, I'm going to do another tabletop simulator game. By the way, if you're a Discord person, you can go into the Discord and you can see the D&D/tabletop simulator video I did. But you know, I was looking at people opening up and I'm like, damn, man, I just don't think we're ready. We'll have to see. I hope I'm wrong, but it just feels like we're not ready to open up yet. You know, like the virus hasn't passed that particular point where I feel safe, you know, throwing a bunch of people on a fucking subway train. Speaking of a subway train, we always have a train of excellent questions from the people in the Discord. Let's begin. Well, this is actually, we're going to start with Twitch. I said, doing a gaming podcast randomly, throw dem questions in here. First one, WTF Famcom says, question, where's the Sega Mini CD? Man, I don't know. That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Because, dude, I'm such a big fan. The Sega CD Mini that fit with the Genesis was quite literally like my first step into the future. Solfice, I think, was the shooter that came out with it, and it had a full voiced starting, you know, just a text scroll, but it was full voiced. I remember just being blown away. Bloody Meatball says, how many hours on average does it take for you to lose interest in a game you're reviewing? And do you dread finishing them if it sucks? No, if it sucks, I've discussed this before, but I'll mention it again. And it's a good question. I am not bothered when it sucks. If they're mediocre, it can be a little drab, I guess, trying to describe what mediocre is, right? But when you look at a game that sucks, I don't have any real issue with that because I find it funny. And so that humor I can get from it, I can give to you guys in jokes and all that kind of stuff. So to me, it's not a big deal. Now, when it says, how many hours on average does it take for you to lose interest in a game? I don't really lose interest in games all that much either. If the ending is slow or just sort of bogs down or whatever, you know, I'll say that. But to me, it's a job. My job is to play it and review it and tell you guys about it. And that and how to get it into the video means I'm not bored because I'm always trying to figure out how I'm going to do that, if that makes sense. So the very act of it removes the boredom of it, I guess would be the easiest way to describe it. Unley Lyrics, how are you doing, man? Long time perp here in the Discord and in Twitter. Do you think it's all right to judge a game based on spoilers instead of playing the game yourself? Oh. You know, you can... Yes, if that's what you want to do. If that's what you want to do, you can do that. I will say this. If I get two people in a room, this is where this question really breaks down, though. If one person hasn't played a game and is judging a game based on, let's say, a YouTube video, and the other person has played the game fully and seen the YouTube video, I would listen to that person more. That's basically all I would state. I would assume that they were more informed because they played. And I would be more interested, by all means, in talking to them because the other person had a non-interactive experience of watching the cutscene. The other person had an interactive experience of playing the game and interacting with the cutscene. So to me, that person is at the very least more interesting to talk to. But you can do whatever you want. We do judge movies by our trailers, right? And I get that there's no interaction. I get that. But that being said, we still do that. So it's not necessarily unheard of that somebody would do this. The interaction is not there. And I get that. And that's a big point. I'm not saying it's not. But this is not necessarily unheard of, because I'm sure he's talking about Last of Us. Me says, I've asked before, but I'll ask again. Okay. I'll ask before, but I ask again. Favorite passive games. Oh, yeah. He did ask. We did answer this. I can't remember. We gave multiple answers a couple times. This has come up a bunch of times. Passive for me might be like a generic MMO I'm high level at. Yeah, probably that. I will say I don't do a ton of passive games because the game is usually not what's passive. I hope that makes sense. I almost never play a game passively and then watch a show. I will watch a show passively and play a game. And that's a huge difference to me. Last Real Panda says, why is the RTS genre so dead? Man, why is the RTS genre so dead? I don't think it is at all. The RTS genre seems like it's doing quite well. Looks like somebody else answered. I would just say I don't really feel like that. I do feel like every genre has a particular time frame in which a lot of releases aren't done, but I don't think it's dead. Mohammed says, why didn't you play Bloodborne till now? Oh, yeah, this was so weird. Why didn't you play Bloodborne till now? I have played it. Even though everyone is telling you it's a masterpiece, not everyone's telling me that. Don't review it. Just play it. I have no clue what this person's talking about. I even asked him. I was like, did you mistake me for somebody else? I have no clue. I think he might just mean because I didn't love it or something. I don't know. Maybe when I say I haven't played a ton of it because I didn't like it enough to continue playing it. That could have been it. But no, I have a feeling that sounds like multiple things that aren't me. So I actually have a feeling that person actually is thinking of somebody else. Gil Beasy says, when did everyone on the internet suddenly become an expert on SSDs and their superiority over any other part of a console? So this cracked me the hell up when I read the question, because this is absolutely, this is for sure for the PS5 and Xbox X. You know what? There are people who are touting themselves as experts of everything out there now. There's some channels that this is their thing. Some know what they're talking about. Some don't. Some know what they are talking about when it comes to past tense. Some don't. But currently, no one who has released a video, no one, by the way, and that includes huge channels, no one has had hands on to do bandwidth comparisons. I will say there are developers who've had hands on with both development kits, and those are the people that I try to talk to. So this other stuff, I don't know. It'll come and go, man. This is something where whenever a system has an issue, this is something that happened with Microsoft where it didn't look like it was coming out of the gate very strong or as strong. And there was a lot of people, including myself, I had somebody leaking data to me that was just completely wrong. That we're talking about like secret sauces and stuff like that. And the same thing's happened with PS5 because of the GPU CPU thing. One of the biggest problems is these companies push a particular power level and they have for, by the way, decades. And then suddenly somebody pretends like that's not what actually matters, when in the end, it still absolutely matters. It's just other things will matter as well, which isn't actually unheard of since the original Xbox had a hard drive. This is something where, you know, we have had unique changes to the systems, and in no way am I equating those, because I'm sure somebody's like, it's not the same thing. Of course it's not the same thing. First of all, one was decades older. Second of all, it's obviously not the same thing because it happened on a different fucking day. Like, nobody needs that kind of redundant argument. What I'm saying is we have had hard drives and we have had systems try different things. In fact, we've had the Xbox 360, which actually had RAM that was installed directly on the motherboard because they didn't install a hard drive. So I can't remember what version that was called. But anyway, yeah, you have a lot of, and you have the SAD, you have the Xbox SAD, which is the all digital one as well. You've got a lot of different ways in which people do stuff. You've got SSDs now being the base, which incurs a massive cost factor for the client. That's one of the things that, you know, I just don't think people are prepared. I just do not think people are prepared. The Xbox, in a weird way, is probably in a slightly better shape because their hard drive specs look to be more in line with normal NVMe that you can get, which is what everybody programs on. Sony doesn't even have an idea right now for any certified NVMe. They even stated it. They're like, we haven't certified any external hard drives right now. So what you see is what you're going to get for at least a little while. But yeah, I know what you mean, man. It's just one of those things. Sidewinder says, would you rather a new Silent Hill or a new Metal Gear? Neither. I'm not really a huge fan of either one of those series, to be honest. Metal Gear probably for me, because I'm not a huge horror fan. It really has to be a certain particular horror for me to sit up and beg for buttermilk. Jupiter says, you feel we're going to be moving to modular consoles in the near future? No, it's a good question, though. That's a good question that I think, you know, bears a little bit of discussion. This has been brought up a couple times, and it's been brought up, obviously, because that's what we're sort of getting with new hard drives. You know, you're able to switch out the PS4's hard drive quite easily to an SSD. Those kind of things are great. You know, they really are. And I think a lot of people are under the assumption, oh, well, we'll just get this GPU and we'll put another GPU in. What people are forgetting, though, is that currently what's going on these consoles is that they're an APU with their CPU and GPU sort of combined. So, and they're a different kind of thing. They're not modular, right? Like what we have seen in a console case or in a PC case where you can pull out your GPU. They could do that. But these setups currently don't have that. And I'm not sure we would want a normal consumer even doing that. I certainly wouldn't. Hard drives are one thing, but man, once you start getting into GPUs and all that kind of stuff, you know, I don't know, the idea of somebody getting a fucking breadcrumb in there, you know, jamming it in. But long story short, no, I don't think we'll go to modular. It's a very good question, like I said, but I think right now, we're sort of at the point where things make sense. The adjustments have been made for this next gen, and people are really going to sit around and just see how all this works out. How does it play out? How does having these hard drives that aren't necessarily huge, how are they going to pay off when you're talking about games that might have massive texture budgets, right? Or massive audio and video budgets? That's, I think, what's going to matter the most. I did also want to talk about it. One of the things that had popped up in the last couple of days was that soon we were supposed to have a PS5 event in July, but it now looks like a couple game designers have dropped out of that to do their own events, and the Sony one will be delayed, which is interesting. This is being recorded on, what fucking day were we? What are we on? I think we're on the 18th today. So stay tuned for that. It'll be interesting to see. Podcast questions. These are from the Discord. The Discord. Dexter, have you thought about handing over the reins of the solo ACG Aimless podcast to Johnny or Reg? No, that doesn't make any sense. The Aimless? No. The Aimless is quite literally, like, if you ever talk to Reg, one of the things he absolutely hates is like superheroes or half of the stuff that my audience likes, you know, where TV shows or airsoft. Yeah, they've got their own channels for that kind of thing. I mean, that would be sort of weird. Another one, the time for either podcast, would you consider an ACG airsoft gathering? We already did. Yeah, we already did. We had some people come over here. We had four or five patrons come, and then I was belonged to a website prior of a forum prior to even doing YouTube, and then jumped to YouTube, and I had somebody from, oh man, where was he? Was he East Coast? He came all the way over to Oregon and hung out with me and stayed the night. Had a great time. It was a blast. But yeah, we've already done that. We'll do something in the future, maybe. The Spaniard says, what place in the world would you like to travel to once we're done with the pandemic? So I don't really care about traveling too much, the Spaniard, but I would say I would like to see Ireland and Scotland. I've got a couple friends in Ireland and Scotland, you know, via the intrawebs, the Discord, and I think that would be great to see them in real life to decide if we actually liked one another. No, I'm just joking. I don't think that's ever happened to me where I've met somebody in real life that I've talked to like online and disliked each other. I can usually get along with almost anybody. I mean, I may not love them or they may not love me, but you know, it's never been a fight or anything. It'd be fun to hang out. Let's see, Scotland, Ireland. Went to Hawaii, hated it. Australia be cool just because I know some people there again. Oh, Grand Canyon. Strangely enough, it's here. I should be able to go to it. I've made plans to go to it twice, both times canceled. I would like to go to the Grand Canyon. I think that's cool. I think that'd be a cool place to see. It looks pretty. And the honest truth is Red Dead got me, the original Red Dead riding through Sedona got me interested in those kind of landscapes, and Red Dead 2, the same. So, Cup of Joe, what's the most fun you've had playing a game with a friend? What was the game? What made it special? Easy. Well, okay, there's a couple games, but I'll say one game that sticks with me as a memory was Rogue Spear on the Dreamcast, which was a Rainbow Six game. And you could have four player split screen. So I have fairly good reflexes, and back then probably a little bit better, even though it seems like mine are better now, but I'm always a sneaky son of a bitch in the way I do things. And one of my friends was a really good shot. So what I started doing was I started purposely showing my head and then dropping or planting C4 on the wall and then stating out loud verbally, because he was in the room with me, "Oh my God," as if I was scared of him seeing me. So it was a double play. And what would happen was he would come around the corner and I'd shoot that C4. I'd set it off while he was coming through the door, and I'd kill him. And I killed him multiple times that way. And we were laughing so hard. We were laughing because it wasn't just shooting, right, that was killing the other person. It wasn't just all these things. It was that you had these double setups and triple setups because we were using not only what was in the game, but verbalizations in real life with our friends that I knew would trick him into believing that there was an issue. So he'd come around the corner and be like, oh shit. And I would pretend to run, but I'd set the C4 and he would come around that corner and just boom. And you know, you're just playing on their ego, right? So Virtual Fighter, the same way. That's one of the games I can say I was amazing at, just got lucky. I was really good at that game. And we would have all kinds of games of Virtual Fighter with everybody on my couch for weeks on end. Hatsuff says, what game do you have the fondest memory of when it comes to the social community aspects? Like, it was a game that was okay, but the people community kept you wanting to come back. Oh, that's a phenomenal question. What game had the best social? Okay, Star Trek Online. And I get this, I talk about it a lot, but I just want to bring this up one more time. So we talk about the online, the free-to-play MMOs, and I know a lot of people don't like them. But I think what happens is you get a really cool core demographic that can end up playing there. And what I had was a fleet. And this was one of the best memories I've ever had in an MMO. But I was in a fleet and I got to 60th level admiral level in Star Trek Online. And I'd been playing with a bunch of people and they were just really helpful. They were really cool. And I went on the next day and they said, hey, we want you to, we're doing this meeting. We need you to come on board this ship. We want to show you something we got in our inventory or something like that. Like, and it wasn't even about me as the admiral. It was like, I can't remember what it was, but it was a good lie. It was like, hey, come on board for a second. I want to show you this. And it was people I trusted. So I go on board and every player from the fleet that could be on the server at the time were in there and they all were like, they had a toast for me being the admiral. And it may sound cheesy, but I'd spent, 60 to 100 hours back then, which I think games that were 60 to 100 hours might be a little less than they are now. And it was a big deal. And they all cheered and they pretended in character. They were like, Admiral, I can't remember what the name was, but they, and I still talk to a couple of them online and I still see a couple of them in that game. But that was one of the coolest moments, was just like, hail to the new admiral, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, what the hell? This is insane. It was so good. So I would say that. The Action Saxon, is there enough benefit in the RTX 2080 to make it worth the venture? And how long until you think ray tracing has a big enough difference to make it a true selling point? Oh, okay. You didn't say what the other card was, sir. Unfortunately, it depends on the card. If you're on a 550 Ti or some ancient 8800 GT, or what was those? NVIDIA 8800, right? LE? No. Was that 8800 GTX? The old ones. It just depends. But the RTX 2080 Ti I have, I'm really happy with. And it really does depend. It's this difficult question. This is almost like whenever anybody says, well, this system can't run a game at 4K. And it's like, well, first of all, yes, it probably can. It just depends on what game, what resolution, and what settings. It's all about your caveats. So without a comparison, unfortunately, it's very difficult for me to answer the first part. You say, how long until you think ray tracing has a big enough difference to make it a true selling contender? I do not think Microsoft would be making a big deal about ray tracing if it wasn't. Most likely what has happened, and this is just me guessing, most likely what has happened is that AMD and Microsoft have figured out a less accurate but more efficient way to ray trace that'll still fool you. Because in the end, does it matter how you got there? Probably not. So if you show somebody two pictures and they both look amazing, and one's ray tracing that's hyper accurate and the other one is ray tracing that is slightly less accurate, but you're getting more frames per second, you'll probably go for that first one. And my assumption is that at minimum Microsoft, because they've talked about how they have their own like ray tracing solution of some kind and they're touting it, I would assume that's what we're looking at. Sony will have their own, but even regardless of the, you know, anything else, they have less computational units. That's actually known. They have less, and those and your overall brunt is how you're doing the ray tracing. So they will be a little weaker on that front. But again, who's going to care, right? Look at Control. Control is such a great example. Control has amazing non-ray traced lighting and reflections. And when you turn it on, you're like, yeah, that is, it does look a little better, but that many frames better. So a mix of ray tracing and non-ray tracing is hopefully what we'll see for this gen. For next gen, we're probably going to start seeing it more, but you're going to look at other, ray tracing may not be the, it's the end result for the most accurate, but it may not be the end result for what we want in games if a person can't friggin' tell. Big Mac tonight says, what's the latest video game console generation would you consider to be retro gaming? Ooh, damn, that's a good question. What's the latest video gaming console generation that you would be that you would consider retro? Xbox and PS1/2. I would consider those now retro. Yeah, I think two or three behind, right? Two or three behind seems fair. The last gen, probably not so much, but two or three behind, I think by then you're retro. And especially when you look at the PS3 and the Xbox's insanely long shelf life, much longer than anybody anticipated, retro popped up a little bit quicker then. So that's the end of those questions. I absolutely appreciate you guys giving them. I think I'll keep this one short. We're already at like almost 50 minutes. I just wanted to give everybody a little something, something to listen to, a little random thoughts. By the way, if you do have anything and you see that I'm doing one of these podcasts and you see me on Twitter, say, throw your topics or questions in here and you actually listen to these, by all means, you should do so because I will try to turn those into discussion points that I can hit here. Same thing with the questions. I absolutely appreciate it. Yeah, that's it for me. I'm going to go ahead and hit it here. I appreciate it. I love you guys. It's been an absolute pleasure to give you guys reviews. You'll be seeing more this week. We're back in review period for a couple games at least. So that's exciting. If you get a chance, follow me at Jeremy Penter on Twitter. It does help spread the word. I never push Twitter and I absolutely should. I should push everything, but I always forget one thing. It's like the one thing and I'll find out it's important. I'll be like, damn. Forgot to push that. And as always, you can leave a review for us on iTunes for this. Spotify doesn't do reviews yet, I found out. So anyway, that is it for me. If you're not a part of the patron, we'd love to have you. Peace out and enjoy the rest of your week. Jazz?